Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ahoy, traveler. You have entered a realm of noble heroes and monstrous beasts. A realm of epic quests and illicit affairs. A realm where tales of myth and legend unfold with every roll of the dice. Welcome to Tales from the Tower.
Welcome to the very first installment, the inaugural installment of Tales from the Tower. This has been something that has been a long time in the making, a long time in the brain squirrel. We've been wanting to do this for so long, and we finally get a chance to actually play D&D with some of our friends and some of our patrons. And we couldn't think of a better adventure to start this off with than Trials of the Tower Initiate from the guys over at Tabletop Journeys. It can be found in the Dragonlance Companion over on DM's Guild. Of course, links to all that in the show notes. That being said, let's dive right in and meet the player party.
I am Grim Brokenhammer. I might not be the smartest hill dwarf running around with two warhammers, but never trust anyone shorter than me.
Hi, my name is Ticknick. I'm a level 2 Thrike Crane Artificer. And yeah, he just likes to wander the world, finding new things.
Navita Anshara, Kalishtar Death Cleric, goth girlfriend of all clerics.
Hello, I am Grim. I am a rogue fighter changeling, and I think more logically than most people would really like me to. Hope that's not a problem.
Our story begins in the port town of Crossing in northern Abanensia, as the characters meet with the Astorio family to discuss the job they have been hired to perform. A coastal storm has been raging since the early hours of the morning and shows no sign of relenting. Shortly after midday, the party arrives at Branchley Hall, a resplendent manor in the port city of Crossing, to meet with the Astorio family. Torlin and Demaya Astorio have contracted you to escort their child, Val Astorio, on his journey south to the Tower of High Sorcery at Weyrith. Stormy winds tug at your cloaks, and heavy rain stings your face as you crowd onto the small porch to get out of the weather. A well-dressed butler with a short, neat ponytail greets you at the door.
Good day.
He leads you down long hallways filled with decadent displays of wealth to a parlor on the other side of the manor. The parlor's door is ajar, and as you approach, you can hear raised voices from within.
I cannot believe you're turning your back on your family to pursue this childishness, a male voice shouts.
A young voice vehemently retorts, I am not abandoning anything. It's my life, my future. I'm sorry if you... But Bean Sprout, a matronly voice says. Magic is dangerous, and not just to the wielder. The butler raps soundly on the door, and the voices abruptly stop. He pauses a moment and leads you into the parlor. Inside, you find an opulently appointed room with fine tapestries and silver candle sconces decorating the walls, and a plush, deep burgundy carpet covering the floor. Four pairs of luxurious armchairs with small side tables between them are spaced around the room, and an ornately carved love seat is centered on the far wall. A handsomely dressed middle-aged couple sits stone-faced on the love seat, where a portrait of a middle-aged balding man with a sour expression hangs on the wall above them. In a nearby chair, a red-faced teenager is perched on the edge of his seat as though he has been about to leap to his feet. A fire crackles merrily in the hearth, centered on the left wall, but the cheery flames do little to warm the frigid atmosphere as you enter. Talarian Osterio gestures vaguely towards the other armchairs around the room and says stiffly,
"Welcome to our home. Please, please sit. I'm sure you know exactly why you're here. We have a family issue, and our son is dead set on traveling to the Tower of High Sorcery to begin the initiation process to become a mage. And you must have overheard us discussing the matter, but I am not seeing eye to eye with him on it, but he seems dead set on doing so. And if he is, then I must be assured of his safety, and that is why you are here. I hope I can trust you to escort my son from his home to the tower in a safe manner."
"As safe as possible."
"I'm sure we can make that work."
"But you guys don't see eye to eye. Have you tried coming to the same level?"
"Master Dwarf, this is no time for puns and jokes, but I do see your point."
"I do have to agree with the dwarf. You may want to settle any differences you have with your son before traveling. It will eliminate any reckless behavior on anyone's part," Grim says as she looks at the young boy.
Grim and Rum, roll me insight checks.
"Oh, it's 11. It's just an 11.
Sorry, that's going to be a 9.
"Well, I do appreciate your wisdom in the matter. I can't help but be furious, to be honest, if we are being perfectly transparent here, that Val is seemingly abandoning his family responsibilities to chase these foolish dreams."
At this point, Demeya, the mother, speaks up. She says, "Dear, let's not be too rash with our words and say something we might not mean." At this, Talarin sort of, you know, puts his hand up and begins to sulk a bit. "As my husband said, we don't see eye to eye with Val, but we do love and care about him. And so if he is to make this journey, we want to make sure that he is safe. It's, you know, the path from here to Weyworth is not a kind one, and there are many perilous dangers on the way, and we just want to make sure that Val is safe," she says as she looks over at her son with loving eyes.
"Does my character know the way they're talking about? Like, do I know this route, or is this new to me as well?"
It's like entirely up to you. I mean, it's not anything. It's the route from crossing to Weyworth, you know, isn't some sort of secret trail. It's pretty well trodden. I mean, pretty much anywhere to Weyworth is relatively easy to get physically. So I mean, whether you know it by heart or you can figure it out is entirely up to you.
Grim is going to lean forward in her seat and look over at Val and say,
"Now tell me, boy, how useful are you in a fight? Or will we be your shield as you stand behind us and cower the whole time?"
Val looks a little perplexed at your question. He's never been asked if he could fight before. And so he's kind of given it a little bit of thought. And he sort of clears his throat and sort of straightens up a little bit. He's like, well, I am starting to learn the ways of magic. And I can do a few cantrips. And, you know, I mean, how hard is it to use a dagger? You just, you know, stick the pointy end on the thing in the monster you want to die, right? He chuckles nervously.
Yeah, this kid, he's got it. He'll be fine.
Well, the boy is prepared for battle.
He'll be fine for parlor tricks.
At this point, Demaya's, you know, sort of interjects and says, well, it would be our hope that Val need not fight. And that's exactly why we are going to pay you to escort our son and to essentially fight for him.
Oh, I'm into that job. Let's do that job.
Have I promised?
At this, Val sort of like, you know, slumps down a little bit. Like he kind of got a little bit excited at the prospect of being asked to join in a fight. But, you know, his mother's response sort of like dampens his spirit a little bit. Navita, roll me an insight check.
That is 16.
So based on Val's responses, you can tell that he's a bit conflicted. You know, he doesn't want to disappoint his parents, and he is, you know, he is beside himself over the pain that he is seemingly causing them, but he wants to follow his dream of becoming a mage, and that resolve is at this point slightly stronger than any doubt that he might have in himself.
Navita will pipe up, almost addressing his parents. There comes a time in every boy's life where it's time for him to become a man. So perhaps his journeys will aid in that journey.
Demaya sort of, you know, sighs. But he's still just so young. And Taloran interjects and says, yes, he's too young. He still has so much to learn. And honestly, the tower of high sorcery is not a place for a young man such as this.
Question. Would Grimm know what kind of people come from the Tower of High Sorcery? Are they established? Are they well-connected?
Well, the Tower of High Sorcery is where mages go to learn their craft in the Kryn world, in the Dragonlance campaign setting. So, you know, y'all would be familiar, at least in passing, as to what the Tower of High Sorcery is. Whether or not, you know, you have, you know, deeper knowledge than that would depend on your character. But as far as, like, superficial, like, top layer knowledge, you would know that that's where mages go to learn their craft. And Ticknick, as you've been sitting there silently absorbing the atmosphere, absorbing the energy, roll me an insight check.
14.
So you've been examining Demaya in particular, and you can tell that she isn't so much upset that Val is choosing his own path, but more so that she is upset over the particular path that he has chosen.
Ma'am, there's nothing wrong with going to learn a bit of magic, you know?
Look, magic is, I suppose you may be right, young master, but I mean, it's almost a week journey from here to there. You have bandits and wild animals and gods know what else. He could be killed. It turns to Val. I can't lose you, Bean Sprout.
Ma'am, you'd be very surprised what a human body can go through before it dies. It'll be fine.
Or on the journey, he could learn to actually be a man. Might change his mind. Might pick up the sword and dagger. Is that what you would prefer? In my mind, the way I see it, if you want your child to be safe, magic would almost be the best way to go.
At this point, Val, like, stands up and raises, doesn't scream, doesn't yell, but definitely raises his voice in a way to sort of sound more authoritative. I didn't choose this. Magic is part of me. I just can't hide it away and pretend to be someone else. At this point, he storms out of the parlor and, you know, leaves. And Tolarin sort of scoffs. See, like, that's exactly what I'm talking about. He's still so young and so impetuous. He has so much to learn.
This might be a bit of a stretch. But is there any way that Grimm would be able to tell what he meant by he didn't choose this, it chose him?
Well, I mean, you know that some people are more in tune with, you know, with the ability to use magic. It's kind of a natural when it comes to it. And so you would assume that he might have just been one of those that have been touched, you know, with that special gift. Tolarin, after his outburst, sort of, you know, slumps down again. I mean, I already offered to hire him a private tutor to teach magic here at home with us. He doesn't have to join the Tower of High Sorcery. Demaya responds, I know, dear, but it seems we're at a loss here. It seems we can't just shut him up and keep him trapped inside of his room. I think he has to go, and I do believe these are those who are going to help him, to help us. Tolarin breathes out through his nose deeply. Very well. So, do we have your agreement to escort our son from Pier to Weyrith?
I don't mind doing it. But
what were we getting paid again?
Took the words out of my mouth.
Tolarin almost like chuckles a little bit. Like, yes, a businessman such as myself would, you know, appreciates, you know, when one gets down to brass tacks, so to speak. You will each be paid 200 gold pieces. 100 now, and then another 100 once you arrive at the Tower of High Sorcery.
We will ensure your little bean sprout makes it to the tower unscathed.
Demaya responds, yes, please, that is truly my only concern.
Have our word.
We'll get your son and whatever plant you want to wherever they gotta go.
From here to Weyrith, like I said, it's about 6 days travel. And so you want to get there as soon as possible. That's at a normal travel pace. Tolarin motions his hand at the butler and sort of makes a motion that the butler seems to understand. And not but a few minutes later, the butler comes back with Val, who seems a little red-faced, almost appears as if he's been crying a bit. But the butler leads him back into the room. And he sort of stands there, like his eyes down, not looking up at his parents. And Tolarin says, Val, these adventurers have agreed to escort you from here to the tower. It is not what me and your mother would want for you, but if it's what has to be done, then this is how it will be done. They will make sure you are safe. They will make sure you arrive in peace. And I suppose we will figure out how to move on as a family together. Demaya stands up and rushes to Val and like kind of gets down to his level and hugs him. My dearest bean sprout, please listen to them. Mind them. They're being paid very, very handsomely for this. And so please make sure that you don't give them any trouble and that you help them out as much as possible, but also stay out of harm's way. Val like sniffles, like, Yes, Mum. Yes, of course. Of course. He sort of wipes his eyes and looks up at y'all at the party and says, we have to leave by at least by tomorrow. I mean, we could leave today, but the weather is, you know, not great for traveling, I would suppose. But we have to get there within 6 days. Where the hell is this? Here we go. We have to get there within 6 days because the tower of Wayward's connection to the material plane is not strong, and so after 6 days it's going to shift out of alignment, and who knows when we'll be able to reach it again. And so, like I said, time is kind of the essence, but I don't know if you want to travel. My bag's already packed. If you want to leave now, we can, but if we want to wait until the storm abates, then we can wait till tomorrow.
Well, I was always told I was not smart enough to walk in out of the rain, so let's go!
Yeah, the sooner we leave, the sooner we can get there.
Forgive me for asking the obvious here.
You are forgiven.
But if we're on such a time crunch of getting there, wouldn't it not make more sense to have carriage and horses?
Talarin sort of bats away the comment. It's not anything that... Traveling at a normal pace, you should get there in time. Val is just a little impatient, and obviously his heart is set on getting there. But were you to leave now, or were you to leave in the morning, you would still make it in ample time.
Well, if this little bean sprout is to grow, then perhaps some uncomfortability on the road is a good first step.
Good point.
Damaya sort of shakes her head. She's like, couldn't you wait until tomorrow morning? The storm should pass by then, and it'll be much easier to travel. But again, it, like, gestures at the party. You're the experts, and I'm not one to tell you how to do the job that you've been paid to do.
I feel departure tonight is the most suitable, even though the weather is not. But the more time we have without closing the time frame too close, then I say we leave this evening.
Yep, you give me my gold, I'm on my way.
Agreed. I have no complaints.
Val sort of perks up at the idea, at the seemingly agreed upon proposition of leaving tonight, and sort of gets a little bit more excited. Like, oh yeah, fantastic! Like I said, my bags are packed. We can go now. So the storm is still blowing mercilessly as the party leaves Branchley Hall. However, and few travelers seem ready to brave the storm. But you have decided to brave the weather. You make your way out of Crossing with the rain stinging your face and the wind whipping your back. And you make your way down the road. And as you, like I said, this was about midday when this encounter started. So you hit the road roughly mid-afternoon, say 2 or 3 o'clock in an hour time. And so you begin to travel. You essentially get out of, you travel for about 6 hours through the storm. Everyone roll me a constitution saving throw.
16.
Nat 20.
14.
Dirty 20.
All of you avoid getting a level of exhaustion due to the strenuous travel. And as twilight starts to sink into the world, you hear rustling in some bushes as you approach the middle of a crossroads. What do you do?
Pull out one of my hammers and then go poke the bush.
Yes, go investigate.
And I'll cover the little bean sprout.
You go to investigate, to go poke the bush, when out pops a Kender.
Don't trust anyone shorter than me!
Wearing brightly colored clothing and holding a pan flute in one hand. Oh, hello! She looks at you, Grum, and your hammer, and kind of like takes like a quick...
I pull my hammer in close to make sure she can't steal it.
Takes like a quick step back, like, oh, Master Dwarf, no need for that. My name is Darina Templewood. I'm just a traveling bard. I mean you no harm at all. Please be assured.
I'll slowly keep backing up.
Hello to the rest of you. I waves at the rest of the party behind, like standing behind Grum. Darina Templewood's the name. Pleased to make your acquaintance.
And what are you doing hiding in these bushes, Bard?
You see her blush a little bit, and she kind of looks down. I was relieving myself. I didn't know that there was going to be travelers along the road at that exact time. That's very, very embarrassing.
You would think to do such activities a little further from the road, wouldn't you?
Well, normally, yes, but, it just kind of came upon me out of nowhere, and I couldn't risk traveling any further than this bush.
Grim just kind of looks at her very, very judgmentally, I'd say. Kind of like you should have known better.
I'm going to pull out my other hammer.
Oh, Master Dwarf, no need to
look around,
to respond with violence. If anything, I can regale you with a song, if you'd like.
Just resting bitch face at this Kender.
Anyone else? Anyone else would love to hear a song?
Can Grim incite this bard to see if everything they're saying seems to be truthful?
Yeah, absolutely.
I also want to do that too.
5.
Got a 7.
You know, she doesn't seem to be any sort of threat. I mean, everything about her appearance, everything about her, her sort of energy, her vibe, seems to indicate that she is just a traveling bard, and you did happen to come upon her, like, using the bathroom in a bush.
Why not, Bard? Play us a song. Perhaps it'll quell the little bean sprout on his first time out on the road.
Val looks at you sort of, a little annoyed at your comment, but he kind of also is excited to hear the song. Like, this is his first time out on the road. So while you're not wrong about your statement, he doesn't necessarily like it being pointed out, but he does obviously have that excitement inside of him.
And who wouldn't love having someone call them what their mother calls
right,
them?
Right, exactly.
So when Grim notices that he gets a little, annoyed at being called Beansprout like that, Grim is going to turn into his mother and mimic the voice and call him Beansprout.
Oh, God.
Val is a little bit terrified at first, but then realizes that, remembers that changelings are a species, in the world, and quickly, and sort of, and knowing then his ability and magic as well. He is startled at first, but then sort of like laughs it off, kind of like, oh, Master Grimm, I didn't. That's quite a trick. I forgot that, of course, you would be able to do that. But if you wouldn't mind, I wouldn't like to see my mom here, if at all possible.
No, I think I'm quite comfortable like this for a little while.
Val, like, sort of, you know, grits his teeth a little bit and sort of says, oh, okay, Master Grimm, sure.
This is the way of the road, little bean sprout. We tend to rag on each other quite a bit, so get used to it. Grow a little bit of a backbone.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's going to help.
So Darina has been, like, waiting patiently. He's like, okay, so are y'all ready for the song?
Yes, much so.
Yes, Bard, play your song.
Pulls out her pan flute, starts to play.
In a town where the tumbleweeds roll, there's a love story that's out of control. He's got a mustache, she wears big hoop earrings. Their love is like a bad dream, but it keeps reappearing. Oh, their love is like a garbage fire, burning bright with terrible desire. It's a train wreck, a disaster in motion, but they swear it's true love, a crazy devotion.
And she goes on singing several more verses and choruses, and it is an awful song, but it's also a whole lot of fun. And you know, how upbeat and how well she performs it is sort of infectious and sort of like lifts everybody's spirits and resolve. And as a result, you know, that sort of that energy translates into like your physicality. And it actually helps you shave half a day off your journey.
What is young Val's reaction to this bard's
performance? Oh, he's enraptured by it. He's, you know, he's heard bards before, but he's never seen a bard out in the wild. He's never, like, he's seen, you know, a bard outside of any sort of, you know, I mean, you saw the kind of wealth his family has. You know, he's usually in like balcony seats, like far removed from the artistic exercise, you know, seeing like being able to like sit on a country road with four adventurers such as yourself and listen to this bard up close and personal, you know, it's not like anything he's ever experienced before. And so he's completely enraptured. He like seems more determined than before to make his way to Weyrith. You know, this, if he makes a comment to you as you start kind of getting ready for as you start setting up your like your bedrolls and in your campsite, that, you know, that this is an example of the wide world that is available to him once he gets to Weyrith.
Navita will put a hand on his shoulder and say, well, little bean sprout, if sorcery school doesn't quite work out, then you could always panhandle while singing on the side of the road.
He kind of chuckles and is like, well, maybe, but I do believe my destiny awaits me at the tower.
Well, we shall see. Speaking of which, what sort of magic do you possess at this point? Let us see a parlor trick.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And so, like I said, y'all are getting ready for you're setting up your camp, you're setting up your bedrolls and all that. One of you is starting, you know, to collect wood for a fire, and once you do so, you start to, like, you know, get the process of the fire started, and Val interrupts you, like, no, allow me. And he sort of like waves his hands and produces the flame from his fingers, and it, you know, lights the campfire up. And he looks at you like, you know, like, impressive, right?
Give him a little golf clap. Not too bad, Val. Not too bad.
I'd like to grumble something about magic users.
Well, Master Grama, you know, you can't use magic for everything, but it does come in handy whenever you do need it.
Ah, you're wrong. I can't use magic for anything.
Oh, maybe on the trip I can teach you a thing or two.
I think I'll pass.
He kind of like laughs, like, fair enough, Master Grum. I see, like, your hammers are all you need.
You're right there. A hammer's true, and it's good. I don't trust you people. He just goes about what he was doing, trying to get his bedroll and things out and about.
Val approaches Grim, you know, who, as far as he has been able to tell, is the most magically inclined of the group, and asks her, are there a lot of people like Grum out in the world who don't like magic users?
Oh, more than you know, child. More than you could imagine. Not everyone is blessed with the gift of magic.
So they fear us?
Fear, use, manipulate, befriend. Sure.
Okay.
My advice, not that you asked for it, would be that you learn how to read people, and you learn how to read people very quickly. Because if you don't, someone will take advantage of you. And it won't be a fun experience.
Okay. Thank you for that advice. I didn't think it was going to be... I mean, I assumed, you know, I mean, you saw how my parents reacted. I assumed that some people, you know, had that sort of mentality, but I didn't realize that there were so many that felt the same way my parents did. And his shoulders kind of drop a little. Thank you, Master Grimm. I appreciate your honesty. And he goes and sits on a log by himself. The sun still hangs low on the horizon as you finish your evening meal and settle in around the warmly crackling campfire. A soft breeze sends rippling waves through the grasslands around you and wafts the decadent aroma of spiced cider across the campsite from a kettle that Val is tending over the fire. With a shy smile, he offers some to each of you and then sits down with his own steaming cup. After a moment, Val says, "This kind of almost reminds me of home. Growing up, we would always sit together after dinner with a cider or a tea. Mother and father liked to add brandy to theirs, and we'd take turns telling stories. Do you think we could do that? Tell stories, I mean."
"Well, of course.
I'm sure we could oblige."
So, Navita and Grum, roll me a d10.
5 for me.
That's a 6 for me.
All right. Navita, tell a story of betrayal.
"Well, little bean sprout, how about a story of betrayal? I was not always the cleric that you see before you. In fact, I used to follow a different god, a lesser god in my eyes now. Much like you, I was not happy with the life that I was living, day in and day out, doing chores, following a god of goodness and light, such boredom. I began to research a little bit outside of my order, to more chaos, into more dark, perhaps. I decided to share once with one of my fellow, one of the fellows from my order, hoping to swear them to secrecy. And it wasn't long after that that the leaders of my order arrived at my bedroom door. They searched my room and found a forbidden text. Something as simple as a book, with information that wasn't, that the heads of my order were not too keen on. Well, before I knew it, I was tossed out, excommunicated. Do you know what betrayal does to people? It changes them. It sows seeds of distrust. It led to my life as a sellsword. It's a curious lesson, little bean sprout. Don't trust anyone.
Val, like, swallows deeply. It must have been hard to believe in something, only to have it go so wrong. Okay. Sighs deeply, and Grum, that's when you pipe in to tell a story about your hometown.
Well, I mean, let's not get it all down. Let's talk about me old hometown. It was a wonderful place, full of all the great hill dwarves you've ever heard of. And if you haven't heard of any, look them up. And there I was, a young lad, trying to come up as a blacksmith. Just the hammers, right? It's the hammers. You notice the hammers. But it was hard, you know, around all these wonderful hill dwarves and this wonderful community. And they came together. Family was very important. And I tried and I tried. And one day, I just got to a point where it all became clear. And I went through the town and everybody was so happy for me. I got a second hammer, because I figured two hammers and do it twice as fast. It doesn't work like that, I found out. But then I went on the road away from my town, and I miss it dearly. And I hope you ever can go to it, the town of where I'm from, called, shit, I can't remember. That'll come to me. But when we get there, I will take you to my favorite spot, the Two Anvil Bar, and hopefully they remember who I am. It's a good story, right? Want me to tell another one?
Val is laughing, almost like giggling uncontrollably. Like, how could you not remember the town you're from, the name of the town? I mean, like, I could never forget Crossing. I loved where I grew up.
I've taken a lot of big hits to the head, kid.
He starts giggling again. Like, well, that could explain it for sure. But yeah, like, you know, don't take, you know, what happened earlier with my parents as, you know, everything that my entire life, you know, my life in Crossing has been great. I wanted for nothing. My parents obviously love me. I wonder if I'll ever go back after my training's done. I mean, at this, you begin to wind down, and the evening ends, and you begin the second day of your trip, the first full day.
In the morning, Grim would have dropped the appearance of Val's mother and just gone back to the appearance that she was wearing when she met him, which would have been a black-haired woman.
All right. He sees that. Like, oh, Master Grimm, very, very pleased to once again make this acquaintance.
I couldn't hold on to that look forever. It would get a little disturbing after a while.
I would argue that it got disturbing almost immediately. And so with sort of like that energy from the bard earlier, from the day before, you're able to make better time on your second trip, on your second day, on your first full day. And as you are making your, as you're traveling, you come across evidence of a campsite where some kind of battle must have occurred close to the roadside. You have six dead gnolls kind of strewn across blood-stained grass.
Looks like a good battle happened here. Dead dogs are good dogs.
Grim would stop, but only to see, like, if she could tell how recently it happened. Maybe by, like how wet the blood is, or, you know, how warm the bodies are.
Roll me an investigation check.
Well, that was a nat one.
Rolling hot.
You think they're still alive? No. You can't discern any information from them.
I'd like to loot them. If there's anything to take. Gold teeth. Anything.
As Grim fails to investigate anything, and Grum starts to try to pick the pockets of these dead gnolls, you begin to sense motion in the trees a few feet away, and out come three gnoll witherlings shambling out of the nearby tree line. Roll initiative.
4.
I love and hate my dice. That's a nat 20.
19.
16.
So how far away are they?
They're like 10, 15 feet away.
And I'm assuming they'd be 10, 15 feet away from everyone?
I'd say they're 10 feet away from Grim and Grum. And then 15, because they're actually on top, you know, like investigating the gnolls. And you are, Navita and Ticknick are, they're 15 feet away from them since they're still a little, and from Val, who are kind of hanging back.
Okay. So Grim would pull out the two short swords that are on her back. I'd say get down low and then make her way toward them. And whichever one would be the closest one, she would take a swing at with her short sword. It's going to be a 12. Does that hit?
12 hits.
And that's going to be 6 damage.
So the first one gets hit by your swords. The bones sort of like clack together. It doesn't, register like any sort of like pain being like an undead creature.
That wouldn't phase Grim, but I will also use my bonus attack to try and stab at it with my second sword. It's going to be a 9.
The 9 misses.
Probably just missed piercing it. Went to the side too far or something.
Exactly. Grum, you're up next.
All right, well, I'll pull out my warhammers and I'll pick the one of them that he was not attacking or she was not attacking. And I will bring the first one in for a mighty blow. 8.
That is a swing and a miss.
I'd like to use my two-weapon fighting and swing my other hammer. Come on. Ooh. There we go. There's 16.
That's a hit.
4, 7 damage.
You swing at the second one. It's able to somehow deftly dodge the first attack, but isn't expecting a swing from a second hammer.
And
you're able to connect greatly. All right, Navita, you are up next.
I'll use my Kalishtar mind link ability to telepathically tell the bean sprout to get out of dodge. And then I will cast Toll the Dead on the one that Grum just hit. And is the other one, another one within 5 feet of it?
Yeah, they're pretty much, like they're all coming out at together as a group. So they're pretty much all right next to each other.
Okay, and the first one took no damage, correct? The one that Grim?
The first one did take damage.
Okay, then I will target both of those with my Reaper ability, which allows me to target two creatures with necromancy cantrips. It'll be a wisdom saving throw.
Well, the first one rolled a 9.
That is a failure.
And the second one rolled a nat 20 for a 17.
That passes, believe it or not.
Yeah, they are not wise, but...
they are lucky.
Yeah, exactly. First one fails, second one passes.
All right, well, the one that failed then takes 9 necrotic damage. Since they're both injured, they'll take D12, or from D12s.
The first one gets hit with your spell, and the bones begin to crack and crumple, and it kind of like implodes in on itself, and the bones just drop in a pile, a heap, on the forest floor. Ticknick, it's on you.
You cast Firebolt. I'm going to aim at the one that has been damaged. Does a 10 hit?
A 10 misses. Your Firebolt flies a little too high. Let's say Val sort of like scampered in front of you accidentally. And at the last second, you had to avoid missing him. You had to, your aim went a little too high. Oh, I'm so sorry, Master Ticknick. I don't know what to do right now.
Stay behind us.
Yes, of course. And he kind of like scampers behind you. Now it is the Noel Witherling's turn. The one that has been damaged goes up to Navita and swings their sort of like spiked club thing that they have. Does a 20 hit? I assume so.
You would assume correctly, sir.
Actually swings twice. 18.
Both are hits.
For 3 points of damage. Now the second one is also going to attack you. A 16 and a nat 20.
Oh god, the 16 misses, the nat 20 hits.
3 points. And that is their turn. We're at the top of the order. Grim's turn.
Okay, so there are 2 of the gnolls around Navita, right?
Correct.
And that would place Navita within 5 feet of them?
Yep.
Perfect. So Grim is going to move up to the damaged gnoll and take a attack roll with her short sword coming in from the side, and gonna say that a 9 probably doesn't hit.
It does not.
Okay. She's gonna use bonus action to hit, to weapon fighting. And I'm going to say that a 24 probably hits.
24 misses. No, of course it hits.
Okay, so that's going to be 6 damage for the attack, and then 5 for sneak attack.
You swing at it with your short sword. You know, your body is already in motion to make the second attack. But you connect with the first attack, and before you can swing around for the second, the Witherling has already collapsed into a heap of bones, and you just swing at air. So, Grum, we have 1 Noel Witherling left standing. It is just attacked Navita, who does not appear to be in the... who does appear to be in dire straits.
I'm going to laugh and scream forward to hit it with my first hammer. And that is the nat 1.
You miss entirely.
Perfect. And the next one, 11.
And you miss with your second attack as well.
Fantastic. Going stumbling like
that,
a fool.
That nat 1, that first attack got you off balance, and you weren't able to hit with the second one either. Navita.
All right. I'm going to bonus action healing word on myself and regain 5 hit points. And then I will use my action to toll the dead again. So take a wisdom saving throw.
9.
That is a failure. 7 points of necrotic damage.
The necrotic energy encircles the Witherling, and you can see it sort of shudder in pain a little bit. It doesn't make any sort of vocal or any otherwise physical indication that it's suffering or that it's been a hurt, but you can definitely know that it's been affected. All right, Ticknick, it's on you.
There's only 1 left, correct?
Correct.
I'm going to shoot the last one with my crossbow. Does a 9 hit?
A 9 misses. All right, well, it's the Witherling's turn. It is going to attempt to bite Navita. The bite is a 22 to hit. 6 points of necrotic damage.
That hits, and it's very rude of that Witherling.
And another 6 points of necrotic damage for the second bite.
Oh, wow.
Ouch.
Is Navita down?
Ouch is right. No, she's still up. Thank God for that healing word.
All right. Well, we're top of the order. Grim, it's on you.
So Grim is going to take a swing with her short sword right down on the knoll and take it. A 9 doesn't hit.
9 misses.
All right. Bonus action, second sword, and that's another 9.
Grum, what you got?
I'd like to scream, I am good at fighting, and swing at the knoll. And I missed. And my second is... Oh, that one actually might hit. 14.
14 hits. What's the damage look like?
4.
Master Dwarf, how do you want to do this?
Oh, just bring the hammer down on its neck. Just quick with a snap.
You swing your hammer down right where the neck bones connect with the skull, and just splinters it in half. The skull goes flying. The rest of the body drops in a heap. And all 3 are dead.
That's how you do it.
Thank you for your help, Master Dwarf.
I told you I was good at fighting.
Val runs up to Navita. Are you okay? Do you need anything?
Yeah, it stings a bit there, Bean Sprout.
Here, hold on. He reaches into his backpack and pulls out a vial, like looks to be like a healing potion. You've seen healing potions before. It looks like to be, that's what it is. Mother gave this to me to use just in case, but I don't need it, and hopefully I won't need it. And he looks at the rest of the party. He's like, should I give it to him?
Please do, dear. I'm hurt rather bad.
Does anybody else have any? Okay, maybe you better give it to him.
8 points of HP back.
Thank you, Bean Sprout.
Yeah, of course. I didn't know. Is that going to happen again, do you think? Do you think there are more?
Oh, probably. Where there's 3, there's bound to be more.
All right. All of you roll me investigation checks.
Nat 20.
All right. So we'll go ahead and use that. So you see that there was a camp here. You can tell, like, based on your investigation. There was a group camped here. The gnolls seemingly attacked those that were here. It looks like there were about 3 people and horses. There was a skirmish, obviously. And it looks as if a lot of blood was spilled that wasn't from the gnolls. Enough to suggest that whoever blood it was probably didn't survive.
But there's not a body for all this blood, is what you're saying.
Correct. All you see are the 6 dead gnolls.
Is there a trail, or does it look like it kind of like goes somewhere and then ends? Like it might have been carted away or something?
You see like the horse tracks like leading away, and they like lead off into a direction that's opposite where you're headed, the direction you're headed.
Well, it appears that some poor fool was murdered and taken away to the Knoll camp. But that's in a different direction and not our problem. We have a job to do.
I agree, it's not our problem.
Val, like, kind of looks down. Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, we probably can't help them anyway, and we do need to get moving.
Agreed.
Yes, you'd hate to miss it, wouldn't you?
No, absolutely. Yeah, let's get going. So you continue your traveling. The morning becomes afternoon. Afternoon becomes evening. And pretty soon you're once again setting up camp. You are you know, you set up a fire, you eat, you know, begin to set up your bedrolls, and you fall asleep to await the next day. Does everyone want to just take a long rest? Do you want to, based on the Knoll attack or the investigation they had earlier, do you want to set up a watch?
I think setting up a watch would be a good idea, but we should all make sure we get our rest.
I'll take first watch.
And I will take second.
I can tell you my girl Navina needs a long rest.
I actually don't have to sleep, so I can take watch.
We can't trust him. He's under my height. I got my eye on you.
Why don't you teach the boy how to take watch?
At this point, Val is already passed out. Like, almost like, yeah, he's like mouth open, like almost snoring, like drool coming out.
He's already zonked.
He's tuckered.
Poor little bean sprout.
So Navita is sleeping. Grim sleeping. Ticknick and Grum are holding watch. Around midnight, Ticknick, you start to hear rustling coming up. And just in the nick of time, you see a party of four bandits and a Kenku attempting to sneak up on your campsite and ambush you. What do you do?
Just shout at them saying, "Hey, you there, stop."
You do that. They hear you, realize they are no longer, you know, no longer they have element of surprise. Now everyone roll initiative.
I assume we do not gain the benefits of that long rest?
Nope.
All right. It's an 18 for Navita.
I got an 18 as well.
5.
8.
We are good at fighting.
Well, this will actually start this with Ticknick, because since Grim and Navita are both asleep, you actually miss the first two rounds of combat as you wake up and join the fray. So, Ticknick, what do you want to do?
I said there's 5 of them, 4 bandits and a Kenku?
Yep.
Right, I'm going to shoot at one of the bandits with my crossbow. Nat 20, 9 damage.
You shoot your crossbow at one of the bandits, and the arrow rips right through his throat and shoots out the back of his neck, and he drops dead.
Huzzah!
Well, it is the Kenku's turn. Going to take a swing at Ticknick with its short sword. 9 misses.
Yeah.
So it swings at you with the short sword, but it seems to... It's almost like it runs up toward you and swings as it tries to run past you. And as it does so, it provokes an attack of opportunity.
Because I'm a Thrike Queen, I have 4 arms, and I can actually hold 2 light weapons, I think. So I'm going to slash at this Kenku with my dagger. Is that 19 hit?
19 hits.
2 damage.
As it's running by, you're able to use one of your extra arms to swipe at it with your dagger. It cuts it in, like on its side. It sort of squawks in pain, but continues to run past you. Grum, it's on you.
So does it move into my space?
It ran, if y'all were standing next to each other, it ran like opposite you. Like if you were, if Ticknick was on the left and you were on the right, it ran to the left of Ticknick. So it's kind of like going around you.
And then there's 3 others behind him, or 4 others?
3. 3 now. Yeah. Ticknick decided that the other one needed an extra hole in his neck.
Yes. Well, I guess I would just hit the closest one to weapon fighting and just go for it. Just the double swing down. That's not going to hit. That was a 2.
Nope, that misses.
And 11.
And 11 misses.
Well, I am good at fighting. End of my turn.
The one that you tried to attack and a second go to Grum. The first one's a miss. The second one, 14 hits for 4 points of damage from his scimitar. And the third goes to attack Ticknick for a miss. swipes at you with a scimitar and misses, somehow misses all four of your arms. All right, we're at the top of the order. Grim and Navita, you are starting to stir. You have already woken up, but you have yet to... It's only been 6 seconds, essentially. So you're still in... You know, still laying down, still in bed, starting to get up, but you are still unable to join the fray. You do notice that the Kenku has run past Grum and Ticknick and seems headed directly for your campsite.
Are we conscious enough to say something?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you're awake. You just haven't been able to physically get up and join the battle.
So this would kind of happen as Grim is getting up, so we can play it out. Is that next turn? But Grim would like look over at Navita and just say, "Protect the boy while we handle this. Clearly, you're still injured."
Navita, do you want to make any sort of like pre-action turn during this round?
Navita will respond with her telepathic mind link. I will watch over the bean sprout.
All right, Ticknick, it is your turn. You've got three bandits left and the Kenku who has already run past you.
I'm going to throw my dagger at the Kenku. 19? What's your damage?
So you throw your dagger. It glances off its shoulder. Doesn't stick in, just sort of like grazes him. Definitely wounds it. You see blood. It squawks in pain again. But it's not enough to keep the Kenku from... continued his approach toward the campsite.
I'm going to take a bonus action for two weapon fighting. Is there a bandit in front of me?
Yeah, one has attacked you, so he's definitely within melee range.
I'm going to hit that one with my light hammer. Does a 6 hit?
Does not. It is the Kenku's turn. The Kenku uses its action to dash toward the campsite. And... it reaches Val, grabs him, and is set to pull him away. Grum.
Somebody get that bandit. And then I'll attack the closest one to me.
All right, well, there are two next to you.
Are either of them injured at all?
Nope.
We'll take the one on the left. And first hammer is 12. 8 points of damage.
How about that second one?
No, that's 11. I know that doesn't hit.
That is a miss. So it is their turn. The same two are going to attack you, Grum. The first one is going to miss. The second one's also going to miss. That third one that you are engaged with, Ticknick, continues to attack you and misses. They all miss with their scimitar. And we are at the top of the order. Grim, you are up.
Okay. This Kenku, is it... how close or far is it from Navita?
I would say that they are they're probably within 10 to 15 feet of you.
This is a really long shot here, but would Val count as an enemy and not incapacitated?
Val does not count as an enemy, no.
Dang it. Okay. Regardless, Grim is going to move toward the Kenku and would she be able to have a clear shot at the Kenku without harming Val?
You'd have to roll at disadvantage.
Well, it needs to be done. I'm going to attack with my short sword. What's an 8 do?
An 8 misses.
Okay, I'm going to use the bonus attack. Does a 14 hit?
That's at disadvantage?
That is at disadvantage.
14 hits.
That will be 9 damage.
Master Changeling, how do you want to do this?
I'm going to imagine that the Kenku is like looking at me using almost Val as a shield, and Grim is just going to very precisely stab her short sword between the neck and shoulder of Val and hit right into the neck of the Kenku behind him.
Val screams in terror as he sees your blade approaching his face, but that scream is quickly quelled by a as your blade drives itself into the neck of the Kenku. Val feels the grip around him loosen, as the Kenku falls over dead.
So Grim is just going to look over at Val and say, get to Nevita. And she's going to... Does Grim have any movement left, I believe?
I'd say maybe 5 to 10 feet.
She would use that to just try to start making her way back toward the other two, toward Grum and Ticknick.
Okay, Nevita, it's on you.
Did any other bandits taken any damage?
One bandit has taken damage. He's looking pretty rough. He took one of Grum's hammers to the body and looks like he might be vomiting up his organs pretty soon.
Well, as he's vomiting up his organs, I will cast Toll the Dead on him. Roll a wisdom saving throw.
That is a 10.
That is a fail. 8 necrotic damage.
That one drops to the floor, drops to its knees, vomits up what might be a gallbladder, and drops over dead.
Ah, beautiful.
Neat.
And it is Ticknick's turn.
Go ahead and hit the bandit in front of me with my hammer again. Guessing a 4 doesn't hit.
That is a miss.
My hammer again. Nat 20.
That's certainly a hit.
6.
Yeah, you smack it on the temple. You see it kind of do like the drunk man like stagger after that someone does after they've been, you know, mollywopped, but then they kind of, you know, steal themselves and stand in front of you. And that leads us to Grum.
Time for you to die. 14, and the damage is 4. That's 19 and 5.
This one looks like it's just about, you know, meet its a maker. When the one that is in front of Ticknick realizes that the Kenku has fallen, and they say, screw this, let's get out of here. And they use their disengage action to run away and into the forest. Do you want to follow them?
I'd like to sprint after the one that ran away from me.
Okay, well, you have a speed of 25, so they have 30, and so you won't be able to catch them as long as they're sprinting as well.
Yeah, I know.
Still going to do it? All right.
Yeah, I'm dumb. I'm going to yell at it. I'm going to, like an old man, get off my grass. You come back here and get your weapons as they get farther away.
How many rounds do you want to use? How many rounds do you want to do that for?
3 rounds till they, you know, like till I can obviously see they're getting away.
All right. So you chase after them for about 20 seconds. And meanwhile, we're at the top of the order, essentially out of initiative now, since everyone has either been killed or run away. What do y'all want to do?
Well, since the dwarf is in pursuit of the enemies, Nevita will ask Val, is he all right?
Yes, yes. I thought you said this wasn't going to happen again.
Well, that's not what we said, but where's your dagger, boy?
He starts searching his backpack and pulls out the saddest looking excuse for a dagger that you've ever seen.
Are we talking like equivalent to a butter knife sad for a dagger?
I mean, it's definitely sharp, but, you know, I would say like, you know, like a Swiss Army knife sort of, you know, equivalent of a dagger.
Did the Kenku had a dagger, right?
Didn't have anything like pulled, like, you know, you can definitely see what kind of weapons they had on him, but didn't have anything, like wasn't brandishing anything at the time.
Okay. Well, I'll say, well, we should remedy this, and I'll start searching the dead bandit and the Kenku to see if it has a small dagger or something I can give to Val.
All right, roll me an investigation check on the Kenku.
Grim's going to check the bodies as well for any useful items.
I got a 16.
I got 18.
I'm going to try and find my dagger.
Yeah, you find it. You know, you're able to sort of track like where you threw it, even sort of like the blood drops from the Kenku, and you're able to retrieve your dagger. All right, so 16 and 18. So as far as you search the bandit, they have a scimitar that is... the bandit has a scimitar that looks like your average scimitar, as well as a light crossbow, which again... average crossbow that you could find at just about any merchant. The Kenku, on the other hand, the Kenku has a short sword and a short bow. These are pretty standard, but they're in pretty good shape. Then as you're continuing to search the Kenku, you see kind of something sticking out of its boot, and you reach in, you pull a scrap of parchment that's been tucked inside. And in common, you see what is a pretty accurate description of Val written on the scrap of parchment.
Well, this does not bode well.
So am I back yet?
Yeah, you've returned, huffing and puffing.
Yeah, I'd like to catch my breath. What did I miss?
Navita will hold up the parchment. It appears someone is after the young bean sprout.
It appears the bean sprout, as you say, is quite popular. Boy, who did you manage to piss off already? We haven't even been gone 2 days.
I haven't pissed off anyone. I don't know who. What? I don't. He's completely perplexed, terrified out of his mind at the fact that this possibly murderous Kenku has a description of him tucked away in his boot.
You know, there's only going to be more people like this in the future. If you want, we can take you back to your mom and dad.
I mean, y'all can still protect me, right?
Oh, of course we can. But what happens when our job is done? And we go our separate ways?
Well, I'll be at the tower, and I'll have enough protection there. No one can do anything to the tower. No one can that would want to harm it can approach it. It's got magical wards.
Don't always trust magic.
I was going to say, I think you put a lot of faith in magic, boy. You put a lot of faith in powers that can be manipulated.
He sort of like steals his resolve, his looks. He kind of like, you know, sets his jaw at this. He's like, yes, I do. I do trust in it because it is my fate. It is my destiny. It's what I'm meant to do.
Navita will stick the short sword into Val's hands and announce to the group, someone teach the boy how to use that.
Oh, with pleasure. And there's just this, like, there's a big smile on Grim's face as she says that.
And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this part of the adventure. Join us again next time, and fare thee well, dear listener, until we meet again. May all your 20s be natural.
Thank you for listening, traveler, and we hope you join us again for the next Tales from the Tower.